Okay, we ready?
You are rolling, right?
Yeah, today is Sunday, March 13th. We've never closed the door. And I trust all the windows are closed. Nothing is open. Should get in. Okay. Today is Sunday, March 13th, 2011. And it's a very, very sad day for us. As you all know, we had a terrible terrorist attack on Shabbat. And five members of one family slaughtered, butchered, including a child of 3 months, as part of the Jewish people, part of Israel, and on a very personal level, it has been horrendous. My own grandson studies in Itamar in the yeshiva at Hezda there, Rabbi Ravansky's yeshiva, Ravansky's yeshiva, and the 11-year-old boy who was slaughtered happens to be my grandson's chanich in the Ezra group. My grandson is a madrich and he's a chanich. And Shem Yirachem Aleinu, the price we pay for being here. And it brought back, in my case, all the memories of all the students, children of students that I have buried, all the friends, colleagues that I have lost in terrorist attacks, including students that I inspired to come in Aliyah, and they buried their own children because they listened to me and came in Aliyah. And I only hope we have to go further. I don't want to go into all my Divrei Torah, it's in my book as well, the ability not to give our enemies a second victory. But I want to say some thoughts that you can hear on a popular level, or you may comprehend it on a very profound level. And there was a keshel bitchoni, I don't have to say that exactly in English, but a terrible lapse in security. We don't know all the details, we'll never know all the details, but from what we hear on the radio and in the press, at 9 o'clock, the security of the yeshiv discovered there was a breach in the security fence, and they neglected to tell the army. No one told anyone. No emergency was called. And the mechablim spent 2 hours till they found their victims, went in and went out without being noticed. Only when the girl returned home from her friends at 12 midnight did she discover the dead bodies. That keshel bitchoni is very frightening. And here you come to the heart of the Muslim movement. Why did Rabbi Yisrael Salanter come to the world and start talking about Musa? And he quoted constantly from Yeshayahu HaNavi, Mitzvat Anashim Mulumada. And what that means, we act out of rote, act out of habit. And this is a human being. We eat breakfast every day. Some of us have been eating the same breakfast till we came to Israel. We've been eating the same breakfast for 25 years. It's habit. We watch the news, watch television. It's habit. This is a human being, and basically there's nothing wrong with it. When it comes to mitzvah, it's very sad. Person can be in the middle of davening. I'll never forget my first Rebbe in yeshiva. I don't want to mention my classmate's name. And he always had 101 things in his pockets. He was a fairly wealthy kid. The rest of us basically were poor kids. But he always had tzatzkes, the latest gimmick that came out. And one time he finishes mincha, the Rebbe says to him, Yisrael, Shalom Aleichem. So Yisrael says, Rebbe, what do you mean Shalom Aleichem? I haven't left the room. And the Rebbe says, while you were davening where your mind wandered, Shalom Aleichem, you're back in Washington Heights. And, you know, this is the human being we put on tefillin. You can see someone putting on tefillin, and after he puts on tefillin, he goes and he curses in a vulgar fashion. He takes them off. It's like he never put the tefillin on. You can see a Jew will daven 3 times a day, and at the same time, he'll be crooked in business. I don't have to tell you, I don't want to go into anything else. God have mercy, the sins we have seen. And you have to ask yourself, how does this happen? A Jew who davens 3 times a day, how any vehemenuva. I don't understand it. And I once got a compliment. The kid showed up at our 5:30 minyan where your father showed up. Kid, a guy in his 60s. And he's looking at me, and he says, Rebbe. So he tells me it was my Talmud in 1962, in my first year I gave in YU. And then he says, you daven with such kavana. He says, I had such nachat looking at you. I said, at this minyan, there's no kavana. I daven like a normal Jew, but the rest of the minyan daven so quickly, you can't have kavana here. But this is a tremendous enemy that we face, because man is a creature of habit. And from time immemorial, we as human beings have had this problem. Why did Rabbi Yisrael Salanter call our attention to it? Because with the modern world, Rabbi Yisrael understood very well, if a Jew is not really committed, he will be swept away. And what he tried to do with the Muslim movement was to give the Litvish Welt what Hasidus gave Greater Poland. Hasidus gave them joy, happiness, a spiritual commitment. He tried to do that for the Lithuanian world, which was a world of greater learning, and therefore he felt singing and dancing. And I just heard today a Sheva Brachas at some point, it must be in the early 70s, and the Rav spoke, and the Rav left. And all the wise Alec Rabbanim, I recognize their voices, are talking afterwards. Now that Rebbe's gone, they're letting down their hair. And one of them, Rav Shalom Dov Kavani, these were names, famous names, Rav Shalom Dov, Kavalski, Zichrono Lebracha, talks about the Shabbat spent with the Rav in onset. And he talks about the fact, Noz Mira, it's so different than the Hasidic world in which he grew up. But what Divrei Torah, what insight. So you see, the Litvish world, you couldn't come along and sell them dancing and singing and a Rebbe, but he tried to give them a feeling how to approach a spiritual life with meaning, with musa, with understanding, and never allowing it to grow stale. B'chol yom, every day you have to feel hamachadesh betuva maisa bereshit b'chol yom. You have to feel, I'm putting on tefillin. I'm davening. What a schut. I'm standing before the Almighty. This is what Musa is about. It's a great challenge. Did he succeed, Rabbi Yisrael? No. He succeeded with the chosen few. All right. I'll admit, I'm very proud of the fact that I have the only smicha that his Talmud gave in the United States of America. I have a private, personal smicha from Rav Yaakov Moshe HaKohen Lesson. So I am a great grandson of Rav Yisrael Salanter. I have smicha from Rav Lesson, who studied with the Alter of Slabodka. The Alter of Slabodka was already a Talmud of the Talmidei Rav Yisrael, and he himself saw Rav Yisrael in his youth. So I have a direct link. But the masses couldn't buy it, only the chosen few. But you see, this concept is so much part of life. This is where our tragedies begin. An army, security, you do it day in and day out, and you're watching and you're walking. And so many years have gone by since the last terrorist attack in Itamar that no one paid attention. Ay, halavai, if they had studied Musa, defenses broken, don't you start thinking it's an animal, it's a cat, it's a dog, it's a deer, I don't know what, jackal, what type of animals are there. You have to, 10 years go by, no terror, it doesn't matter. This is terrible sakana. And as one of our politicians said today, and correctly so, defense worked. But there was a keshel enoshi. The human beings didn't respond properly. And take a look what it means not to respond properly. 5 souls wiped out. And think the 3 children that are left, the parents that are left from both sides, Hashem Yerachem. Now, this will explain something else to you. This is Reb Yisrael. This is so important. I want David to tell Matan he's in the army. I don't know how much Shmirah he will be doing, but always to take it seriously. You never know, chas v'chalila, when the next tragedy will approach. But this will explain something else. This will explain Reb Chaim. You see how smart Reb Chaim was? Let me tell you a little story. There are certain areas of Israel, particularly the Beit Shan, which once was a very hot border. Until King Hussein slaughtered thousands of Palestinian Arabs, it was one of our hottest borders. In the early 70s, literally, I cannot forget it, I remember seeing on the news how the Jordanian army literally slaughtered the Palestinians who were shooting into Israel or trying to come across. So there were always patrols on the Beit Shan area. Years went by, and the question was raised, do you have to patrol on Shabbos? A patrol meaning jeeps, half tracks, armored cars have to go up and down. So, and there are a lot of religious kibbutzim. If you know that area, there's the heart of Kibbutz Adati is in that area. So they turned to Tzomet, or whatever it was primitive then, but Tzomet came up with a jeep that worked with the concept of grama. That whole principle of the grama switch, which characterizes so many of the Tzomet inventions, they came up with. So I remember people rejoicing. Thank God we don't have to worry about any Yisid, the Oraita, and definitely we don't have to go into any Sveikot, we don't have to get involved in questioning, do we, don't we? And I played the devil's advocate, and I said, Reb Chaim Briska would not agree with you. Nach Reb Chaim, and today it's been published already in the name of Reb Velvel, the Briska Rav's son, Reb Velvel Briska, that Reb Velvel said to him, that Reb Velvel said, my father said to me, that what does it mean, Sakonet Nefashat, even if it's one millionth of a chance. And this is why Reb Chaim told Reb Velvel, I'm so makil with the shilas of fasting on Yom Kippur. And I want to tell you, this is so correct. It's not that I'm opposed to the grama jeep. It's not that I'm not happy that there is a grama jeep. And I've gotten these shilas from my own grandchildren who are on patrol on Shabbos in areas which have been relatively safe. Underline the word relatively. And this is why when you're in Bitachon, when you're in the army, when you're at a border, God have mercy, never take it for granted. Never fall into what Reb Yisrael Shtolanta shouted about, mitzvat anashim melumada, chas v'chalila. Take it so seriously that halavai, you should be wrong 99% of the time. But the 1% where it's not an animal who crossed the security parameter, that 1%, 5 lives would have been saved last night had it been reported at 9 o'clock. So I just want to say those words. I know I was in the army and I served 14 and a half years. I can't say what I did involved total security. Although I fought in two wars, I basically was a lecturer. But I'll tell you one interesting story. In the 82 war, my unit reached Sultan Yaakov. And if you recall, Sultan Yaakov was a terrible battle. 3 soldiers are missing until today. You'll read in my new book, I'm quite involved in that Sultan Yaakov battle because of what happened afterwards. But my unit reached Sultan Yaakov, and right beyond us was the security parameter. You know what a security parameter means? When the army moves to a certain position and they stop, immediately tremendous tanks are called in that have bulldozers attached to them. They're like bulldozing tanks. They are they are, what's the word you would use? Mammoth, they are gigantic. Behemoth would be the word. Mammoth, you can't believe how big they are. And within minutes, they dig up, they knock out all the trees, all the shrubbery, and they make a wide path totally around where the army is. Every 10 minutes, there are then patrols going by that are checking whether there are any footprints. So here I am, the middle of speaking, hundreds of soldiers are assembled around me, and I'm, you know, speaking, and we're doing what we have to do, and the patrol is coming by in a half track, and they hear me speaking, and they stop the half track, and they're listening, they're enjoying themselves. And the commander was a Scano, was a brigadier general, the head of that whole area, said, he interrupted me, and he said, stop speaking for a minute, Kol Harab Nolahav Sikla Daka, and he goes over to the patrol, and he says, get moving, your job is not to listen to the rabbi, Atem lo kan lishmo et harav. You gotta check that there are no footprints, and that's exactly what's involved in Shmiran, exactly what's involved in the army. Halavai we should achieve it when we put on tefillin. Halavai we should listen to Reb Yisrael. But when it comes to the army, if you don't take it that seriously, if you don't understand Yeshaya HaNavi, if you don't understand Reb Yisrael Samantha, if you don't understand Reb Chaim Briska, the results can be terribly tragic. Okay, Adkan is what I wanted to say. Now, let me go further. And we're dealing here it's the person you asked me about. Now, my daughter tells me he's a wonderful human being with a lot of midlight, a lot of compassion. The problem here is something else. The rabbinate here in the Bate Dinim have a different system than America. They question the person, and if they feel it's a ger that's a tzaddik, they write Ben Avraham Avinu or Bat Avraham Avinu. If they feel it's not a tzaddik but a normal ger, they write Hager or Hagiyoret. That's what my daughter told me. But she says that particular name that you gave me, to quote my daughter, who's a pretty difficult person, she knows the ins and outs, and she doesn't give compliments easily. But she said he is a sweetheart. And so she's had cases where he stayed overtime to give a get, where he scared the hell out of a man who was trying not to, you know, to insist upon a little bit more money. She has seen him in action and she's very impressed. Okay, now, with all that we've said about the B'Samim Rosh and this literary forgery, so if you recall the B'Samim Rosh regarding Chazaret Hashatz Mincha, I got involved with in the Litvish Welt, who says Tachman. Remember, I showed you that the B'Samim Rosh, everyone asked me, how could he pass off such a forgery that until today, big Talmid Chachamim will say, Rakefet doesn't know what he's talking about, he's a rotten, vicious, malicious, hideous, heinous, ruthless, depraved, degenerate, debout, surreptitious, malevolent, why you graduate, what does he know, cut it out, how does he know that the B'Samim Rosh is a forgery? Fine, let anyone say that, and if my lectures don't convince him, I'll raise my hands and say, Elu v'Elu. But, how did he pass it off? Because there were so many questions that are normative. In other words, when you have, 392 different shuvot, he put in stink bombs or firecrackers. But logically, the normative flow was within the context of halacha. And last week, for instance, we dealt with one of the questions of Chazan and Yom Narayim. For the sake of argument here, you're going to go into the rabbinate. No, no achcheses. I pick on you because you don't have a beard. You're going to go into the rabbinate. They're going to ask you to daven on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Are you allowed to daven on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur? When I look at the halach, it says it has to be, look into the Shulchan Aruch. You have to be a tzaddik, you have to be married. Fine, that you are. You have to have a beard. Okay? I'm not a Baal Tefillah, but maybe you're a Baal Tefillah. So, it's a normative question. What about Avinu Malkeinu? Do you say Avinu Malkeinu on Shabbos? On Yom Kippur? Do you say Slichot on Shabbos on Yom Kippur? So you see, these are normative questions. So we get involved. Why do Jews not like to say Tachnun? Why in the Litvishi Yeshiva they made Mincha so quick? So we spoke about it last week. So a Talmud of mine, Rabbi Yeshua Grinstein, who plays a major role in the rabbinic scene today, he's the co-head, I believe, of Rabbi Riskin's Strauss Amil program, tracing rabbis all over the world. So he wrote me a long letter showing the sources, some of which I know, that, the Rambam already questioned, why do you have Chazaret HaShatz? What's the whole reason if you have Chazaret HaShatz? It's because people didn't have Siddurim. So why do you have the Salah Shema Esrei? So he's Malamed Schut that the real reason the Litvakin made the Mincha Metaheche Kedusha. Gili, I'm speaking a little Yiddish. The minute you don't know the words, you stop me. Heche Kedusha, right? That much. What? In my time, all the Svad, all the Eidat HaMizrahi went to IU. Spoke Yiddish better than I do. You understand? They were finished. They had no choice. I went with the chief rabbi's brother, was my classmate, Leon Katzin, a much younger brother. Saul, one was the chief rabbi, one was my classmate. He spoke, sat in front of the Rav. You didn't know he was Eidat HaMizrach. Go and dream. He's a Syrian. He davens a different Nisach. Geret Yiddish Miyala. So the minute you see I go off the path or go back to my youth, you shoot me down with pleasure. So he claims that the reason they will make real is Tshuvat HaRambam, and you have Yisrael Shmon Esrael, Maharet Tavim, you don't need Chazaras HaShatz. Gentlemen, Rav Grunstein may be partially correct, but I have to tell you, my educated hunch is that the Litvische Welt was so into learning, learning came ahead of everything else, and I cannot forget. Remember, I am only sitting here because I was exposed to the Shanghai crowd. I have to be honest, I probably would have become my brother became a medical doctor. I was not a stupid kid in school. I don't want to tell you what that is. Doesn't matter. I graduated summa cum laude, number one in my class, Yeshiva College, big deal. I would have gone on to medical school. I would have been a doctor. I think I would have been from, I think so. I don't know. I hope so. I pray so. But, it was a different era then. But the Shanghai crowd, it was a miracle what I was exposed to. Japan shouldn't be punished the way it is because Yitz and I are only sitting here because of the Shanghai crowd. So, Reb Henich Fishman, who was my 8th grade Rebbe, Reb Henich Seichet Tzadik Lebrach, the lady we taught in the same faculty, reads, Reb Henich, we were very close, very close. I was very close with my Rebbe, and I was, Baruch Hashem. So Reb Henich said to me, I feel bad, he says, when I look back in Mir, he says, I never sang, never davened l'chadodi. I said, Rebbe, was make me nishke davened l'chadodi? What do you mean you didn't daven l'chadodi? He says, no, we held it, we were learning Gemara, we were always learning. And l'chadodi, there's no chiyim, it's not a d'oraita, it's not a rabbanan, it's a Johnny come lately, you should know l'chadodi is the latest addition to the Siddur that everyone says, Sfadim, Ashkenazim, Germans, Eidat HaMizrach. So he said, I feel bad. And I say, I saw that attitude that davening, this is the way I read it. And my reading is a little bit better than you, than my Talmidim. For one simple reason, I yet learned in real Lithuania. I was exposed to it. You got to remember the Shanghai crowd. Then afterwards, I was in Lakewood, and I remember in Lakewood. I can tell you a story. The Art Scroll crowd will not believe it, but it doesn't matter. My intellectual honesty is, I think, proven. So you don't have to doubt this little story. There was one guy in the yeshiva. He stood at Kishtan in a Langish Shmon Esrei. What a long Shmon Esrei. Way beyond Reb Aaron Kotler, way beyond the Mashgiach, Reb Nassim Vachtvogel, and Reb Aaron called him over, and Reb Aaron said to him, "Ich tracht es beim Yadaya, Hamening, as Yishtet Simen Esrei Tzulai." Reb Aaron said to him, "I think it's my humble opinion that your Shmon Esrei takes too long. No, you hear what I just said? That's a Litvashi Yeshiva. When a guy stands and it's already, everyone's in Seder and learning, and Esh Teit Nach Shmon Esrei, Rabbarin told them off. Okay? So I stand essentially on my theory that the Litvashi Welt, learning was everything. And as Rav Shalom Duvall, Dov Kalvaski said, it was 40 years ago, but I only heard it today. I have such hanah for what they gave me. I thank my Talmidim. And he says, I spent Shabbos with the Rav, and he says, no smiris whatsoever. But a lot of different Torah. You know what's funny about it? I once heard the Rav say that, he says, I don't know how to sing smiris, he says. My grandchildren are mad at me. You know, his grandchildren are coming to Tweskies. It's Siddisha family, the Tonga Rebbe, the Chinanama dynasty, it's not a small matter, ain't Kleinekite. So the Rav says, my grandchildren are mad at me. He says, I have to. So he says, and then we do sing one Zema for the grandchildren. And then they're mad at me, I don't know how to sing. He says, but I never was taught these mirrors. My father didn't sing them. So all right, Baruch Hashem, you can't win. By the way, the Rav had a fairly good voice, and at least in his prime, he had a fairly good voice, and that's why his name is Soloveitchik. You know what I'm talking about? Josh, do you know or not? The Rebbe's going to give you knowledge now, but this is $1,000 on the IOU list. I don't want wise whippersnappers like you getting it all for nothing and not appreciating it. Are you willing to pay? It's on the IOU. Good. The Soloveitchik in Polish means nightingale. A nightingale has a nice voice. What was the tafkid, the job of the Levian of the Beis HaMikdash? To sing the Tehillim, the Hallel. So to be a Levi and to sing, you generally had to have a nice voice. Soloveitchik, Yosef Dov, HaLevi Soloveitchik. That's how he gets the name, Soloveitchik. Rabbi Nightingale. Or Zamir. You follow? Soloveitchik. You want to hypnotize it. If you meet a Zamir, say, hi, Mr. Soloveitchik. He'll say, how did you know? You'll tell him it cost you $1,000, but you know. Okay. Then we spoke about the whole question. You got to admit the question of women making the bracha. Nothing is more normative than that question. And when you talk about it, Gata Mizrach and Ashkenaziyot, if you grew up on Rabbi Ovadia Yosef's lap, a woman has nothing to daven. Psukei Dezimra is out. You can't say bracha. Kriyat Shema. All right, maybe there they'll allow the bracha. It's a chelik of Kriyat Shema. I don't even know. Tell me, anyone daven Eidot HaMizrach? Your wives? Did they hear? Does she say? What do they say? Without Shem and Malchus. Could you imagine? And Birchat the Torah is out. I know. Well, boy, they. No wonder they can have lots of children and have time to devote to them. The problem is they're corrupted by the feminism. Children, what a world we live in. Children, but I say the level, it's not an easy issue today, because everyone tells me a woman has to have a profession, you need two incomes to survive. And it may be true, but where I come from, women did not work, be it as it may. Now, so there, you know, you're dealing with normative halacha. The whole question with the lulav and etrog and eating before you take the lulav and etrog, once again, you're dealing with normative halacha. Now, let me pick up. I'll give you another few examples, and then we move in to World War III. Give you another example. No, I want to ask you a question. You all, Adam, Friday night your father makes Kiddush, standing or sitting? What do you mean both? Explain to me.
He says
Vayechulu, he stands, and then when he reaches Baruch Priyagaf, and he sits down. Why does he do that? Why does he stand for Vayechulu? So the Jews, first of all, who sit for the whole Kiddush. The Jews who stand for Vayechul and Mishnah Berurah stand down because it's Eidut. And when you give Eidut, you stand. No? And tell me who comes here from a Hasidish background? There are plenty of Jews, the majority of Jews stand for the whole Kiddush. Mm-hmm. Right or wrong? Chassidim, I don't know, the majority of Jews look at me like I'm crazy when they're standing for Kiddush. And I'm sitting for Kiddush.
Your father sits?
You can't go by my father. You have to go by my grandfather. My grandfather stood. My grandfather stood, of course. I don't have to tell you. This question goes back to Tosfot already. You can do a master's thesis on this question with ease. What's the question? Look, may Iker Hadin, it's a Mishnah in Bracha. We make a Ziman, we make a Bracha. You have to be sitting, you have to be Yotze, you have to have Kavana. Sitting creates the interconnection between the Jews. It's Suda, you're starting a Suda together. You can be Yotze, the Bracha. May Iker Hadin, you absolutely have to sit for Kiddush. Knew already the Balei Tosfot saw Jews standing. So they were Melamed Zchut on those who stood, Mishum Yikra de Shabbos. What does that mean? That out of love for Shabbos, someone important walks in, you jump up, you stand up, right? You know, you give cover. Right? I'll never forget, there's a big auditorium in YU, at least in my days today, who knows what's happened to Nathan Lamport. But I'll never forget the registrar of the yeshiva, his daughter got married. It was David's daughter. So here we are at the wedding, and hundreds of people are in the auditorium. And when the Rav walks in, all the way on the other side, I was all the way on the right, he walked in on the left. I jumped up, and everyone around me jumped up. Sitting next to me was a professor of English literature, who really, you know, didn't know much about Torah, and he said, wow, he said, this is impressive. The Rabbi Soloveitchik is so far away, he doesn't even see you. And you're standing up, so he explained to him, this is covered for the Gadol Hador, you have to stand up. So the same thing with Shabbos. Yikra the Shabta, that you love Shabbos, you have to stand. So this is a machlokes from time immemorial. And I can only tell you about the Rav, and this is what Yitzchak was alluding to. The Rav would give tremendous shayurim, proving you have to sit for Kiddush. And then right after the shir, a Talmud would come over and say, Rebbe, what should I do for Kiddush? And the Rav would say, do whatever your father does. My father stands. Well, what's the shayla? You'll stand too. But Rebbe, you just gave this whole shir that one has to sit. And this is the key to understanding the Rav. Lambanut or lambdus is one thing. Halacha l'maisa, tradition, like fiddler on the roof. Tradition knocks out brisk, litvisha thinking. And this is exactly the answer that he gives here. At the end of B'samim Rosh, Ayin Dalet, when he's asked about standing for Kiddush, and in the sukkah, and he says, no, it's not proper, you have to be motzei yishat reyehu, and it only goes with haseba, and our sitting today is like the haseba of old, but he says, nevertheless, I can understand there is a minhag going back to the Balei Tosfot, because of Yikra D'Shabta, he quotes exactly what I quoted, and he says, even though it's a Birchat Hayayin Shel Kiddush V'Havdalah, but these people stand. And if this is the case, either way you will be Yotzei. This is a machloket that is basically almost as old as our traditions. Fine, normative. Not one firecracker here. Finally, I'll take one more, B'samim Rosh Ayin Hei. Again, I can't believe this really happened, but it's fascinating. Gentlemen, have you ever seen a Nazir? All right, I've spoken about Nazirut many times. To understand Nazirut, logically speaking, we should not be Nazirim. Logically speaking, it's a sin. You all know the famous Yerushalmi, you bring a kopm chatat, mitnei shechit zirat, that's momen ayayin, and many a good Jew, you know, you're in sometimes wealthy homes, and there's some Jews are afraid for, literally, they don't want me to come into their homes to see the opulence, the way they live, you know, they think I'm not living in this world, I'm aware, Baruch Hashem, Jews have money, so they start breaking out wines. Yeah, that whoever dreamt of $100 a bottle wine with a hechsher, and they'll always say, "Min daf hanava haben from the leaven." We have to have joy out of life. A nazir brings a cup in chatat. Everyone knows that. Fine, good. So I don't know. He's talking about a nazir. Ask him this question. The only Nazir I know is Reb David HaKohen. That was the fan. That's what I told you. Remember, I gave you a whole Devar Torah, that why did the Torah include Nazirut? And I think I heard this from the Rav, but it's powerful. Either it's from the Rav, not the Rav, it's basic Yiddishkeit. And why? Because not everyone can walk the same path. Normatively, we don't want people to be Nazirim. But if a person feels in his heart he wants to be a Nazir, so the Torah gives him a chance to do it in a way that's sanctified. And Reb David HaKohen felt he had to do something to expiate the years he was too secular in Switzerland, and Rav Kook told him to become a Nazir Olam. So you know that his son, Reb Shaya Yashiv Kohen, has many of the chumras of his father, including not drinking wine. So he gets the Shaila, can a Nazir make Kiddush on wine? All right, this is an interesting Shaila that he says, why should there be a heter? True, he can't drink wine, but wine is only lachatchila. Can't we make Kiddush on bread if we don't have wine? What did Jews do in Russia, the Balei Tshuva, when they couldn't make their own wine? They made Kiddush on bread, Friday night. Shabbos by day already, Yesh Lahakel on vodka. I don't have to tell you, Shabbos, Matzoi Shabbos, Havdalah, Chama Medina, beer. There are solutions. But Kiddush Friday night, we all make Kiddush on wine. But if you don't have a choice, you can make Kiddush on bread. So we paskins lahalacha for this Nazir, that you should make Kiddush on bread. Was this a real Shaila? I don't know. Could very well be that he put it in to show people that this is normative. You don't have to worry. It's part of the halacha. It's not a firecracker. And the more normative tshuvah he has, the more firecrackers that can be thrown in. Okay. Yes, Nachum.
What did you do in the Seder in Russia?
I would imagine you'll see in the Tshuva, I never asked Rav Shaya Shavakon, but they drink four other types of liquid. Not the Tshuva out of the lower lane of the Holocaust, that they couldn't get wine, or if you can't drink wine, etc., etc. So b'di'evid, you'll be able to say, it's only a dinda rabbanon, geula. So you take four cups of the strongest beverage you're allowed to drink.
Can you make Kiddush on Masa at the
same? Then you miss the second cup.
Push up Kiddush until...
No, but the second cup is metukenet. I mean, lachatchila you certainly can. But the evid, if someone has no wine, so they make Kiddush on Matzah. But the takana of the Dalet Tosad, it turns the Kiddush Friday night, it's more than just Kiddush. It's the first cup of gula. Can you bring me a proof that I'm right? It's a very simple halachic proof. Every Friday night they just changed the clock in the United States of America. I guess that includes Canada too. Anyone here from Canada? Am I right? If they change it in America, they change it in Canada? You don't know. And they just turned the clock last night. So we're going to change the clock, if I'm not mistaken, in 2 weeks' time. In 2 weeks' time, you're going to go to the kotel at the regular time, and you're going to say, gee, the Rebbe's not here. Baruch Hashem, Be'ezrat Hashem, I will be there, but the minute they change the clock, I start davening early. Why do I start davening early? Because I'm going to be traveling during the June, and then afterwards July, August. Wherever I go, they're only going to be early minyanim. The Rav felt if you daven early, you have to daven early all the time, either late or early, but you can't do it for your convenience. You have to show consistency standing before the Ribbono Shel Olam. So to please the Rav's psak and to please my wife, I don't know which is more important, all summer I daven early. No, you daven early, you get home, it's after the plag, can you make Kiddush? Absolutely. Leil HaSeder, you get home, you davened early, you want to make Kiddush, the rabbi slaps your face and says, Chas v'chalila, you can't make Kiddush until the stars are out. Lamai nafgemina, because Leil HaSeder, the first cup is not just Kiddush, it's the first cup of Dalet Tosef, Yayin Gula. Bizman shematzu mara munachem lifneichem. You follow me? It can only be at night. That's Taluya night. So that's the answer to your question. Now, we're coming into very fascinating material. Summon Rosh appeared, came out, made the rounds. Essentially, the first great rav to call him to order was Reb Mordechai Bennett. His sefer is called the Parshat Mordechai. Now, a few words around Reb Mordechai Bennett. Not Bennett, B-E-N-E-T in English. Bet Nun Ayin Tet. They're direct descendants of his who live in Israel today. Bennett. When you hear Americans with the name Bennett, are direct descendants of Reb Mordechai Bennett or Bennett. Now, his years 1753-1829, he became the Rav of Nikolsburg and the chief rabbi of Moravia, not to be confused with Reb Yitzchak Bernays. In other words, Bernays, who had so much influence, Chacham Bernays, who had so much influence on Shem Shapol Hirsch, is not Reb Mordechai Bennett. The names are similar, and their outlooks were similar. But Reb Mordechai Bennett was older. Now, notice the years. What does this tell you? 1753. He grew up when Mendelssohn already had left the ghetto. In other words, when did Mendelssohn leave the ghetto? 1762. So by the time he was a teenager, he already understood what was happening. This leaving the ghetto, this exposure to the big world, this big thrust to modernize the ancient Torah, as the Rav used to say, they view Torah existence as an old senile lady. As an old lady who suffers from senility. By the way, I can tell you in parentheses, I never understood why the Rav always used the example of an old senile lady. What about an old senile man? And then I realized why. Men generally die younger than women. And generally speaking, men, whatever the reasons are, it'll be interesting to see 50 years from now, with all the women working, am I coming through on the microphone?
Yeah.
No.
That microphone is power outage.
Which has a power outage?
The one that's not connected to the recorder.
One second. This.
That one is still recording.
No. This one is not working.
It's not working. The air conditioner also turned off.
I'll continue. But it's recording me. The one recording. Okay. There was a power already this morning, a power outage this morning. I'll tell you what the problem is. The fuse went down, but there's nothing we can do. Okay. God, the Ribbono Shel Olam should give strength. So we already saw what was happening. And as I said, the Rebbe would speak about how they viewed Torah Judaism when he came to America, that they viewed it as an old senile lady. And I always wondered, where are the men? But Baruch Hashem, the women lived longer. It'll be interesting to see, they generally attribute that to a man goes to business, a man's involved with money. It'll be interesting to see, after 50, 60, 70 years of women working, if their life expectancy is shortened. Chas v'chalila, but it'll be interesting to see. So, he knew what was going on. Now, he himself was not extreme, meaning although he opposed the Haskalah and he opposed religious innovation, he understood what was happening around him. And he did not fight it tooth and nail. I can bring you two proofs to this. One proof, when they republished Mendelssohn's translation of the Pentateuch, he gave haskama, he gave an approbation. Now, what's interesting about that approbation, that haskama, he didn't mention Mendelssohn's name, but he spoke about the fact that the Jewish people coming out of the ghetto need a translation in German that they will understand. So that's one point. Gave a haskama. Second point. A big Talmud Chacham from Hungary by the name of Aaron Chodin. The Jews like us said about him, his name is Chodin, that he gets Af Hashem, Chodin from Lashon Charon Af, that he gets God angry at him. What does that mean? He went to a... do me a favor. Oh, now it's on. Okay, someone turned it on. Okay, good. Rabbi Charin. He came up with a whole sefer justifying the use of the organ in the synagogue. Now, you have to understand what was happening. When you come out of the ghetto, you're overwhelmed by the Western world, by the modern world, I should say. You want to look like them, live like them. Look at us, look at the way most of us dress. I don't believe anyone in this classroom wears a bekesha on Shabbos. I don't believe anyone wears a shtreimel. We dress in a modern fashion. Why do we dress in a modern fashion? We think this is the way sophisticated people dress. Many of us, although in this room I can't say it's the majority, many of us are clean shaven. Why are we clean shaven? As we've seen from the Besamer Motion, all that's been written, psychologically we all feel that to be clean shaven is part of the sophisticated modern world. Fine. And this goes on with many aspects of life. None of us here use a pen that you have to fill with ink anymore. We're all using modern pens, ballpoint pens, what have you. Okay. When it came to religion, you looked around at what went on outside the ghetto. You went into a church. Wow, beautiful music. This is the way to worship God. Why can't we worship God the same way? And into the shul, they brought the organ. And a tremendous machloket broke out, and Rabbi Chorin wrote a whole sefer justifying it, that there was music in the Beis HaMikdash. We just spoke about it, the kelim in the Beis HaMikdash. You see in Tehillim how the kelim are described. And what's wrong with having it in a shul? A shul is a mikdash ma'at. If you have it in a base mikdash, why can't you have it in a shul? And it glorifies the service, it ennobles the service, it makes the service more sophisticated. And he went on, he dealt with the Gemara in Beitza, that Shem Yitakein, and this would not apply in a shul, and you have the people are watching, it's like sitting with the next to a Nair on Shabbos, you're not going to touch it because the two of you sitting there, etc., etc. The world came down very hard on Aaron Chorin, and of course they called him Charon Af Hashem. What's fascinating is Reb Mordechai Bennett wrote against him too, but not as sharp, not as critical, in a more relaxed tone. He understood that this is not just a problem of halacha. He understood it's not just the problem of theology. What motivated him was, we're coming into a big world. we're going to have many struggles. I would be willing to say that Reb Mordechai Bennett would have been very happy to know that one day there'll be a yeshiva at Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan. It will have Rabbeim who are Bekiyim and Shas and Paiskim, and yet are at home in the modern world. So it shows you that he wasn't an extremist. And yet, when the Pesachim Rosh appeared and he went through it, he was hysterical. Because what you saw in the Summon Rosh was Zil Hadat. It was essentially a falsification of what Torah is about, what religion is about. And he was shocked. He was flabbergasted. And I'll show you the truth in a moment. If I can make an analogy, I just want to state something, I'll show it to you tomorrow. Nachum Lamb was kind enough to lend me a volume that came out at Hebrew U. A year and a half ago, there were lectures at Van Leer. Van Leer Institute is a... right now, they're having a lecture on Parshat HaShavua, and this year it's devoted to music, and everyone who lectures, Datiyim, Chiloniyim, professors, Rabbanim, everyone who lectures will speak on Parshat HaShavua and something to do with music. And it at one time it was called a left wing. It's sponsored by the Van Leer family, very wealthy. I believe they're from Switzerland, if I'm not mistaken. And they run these type of lectures. At one time it was called quite left. I don't believe it's left politically today, but it's certainly not a Haredi place. And even not a YU type of outlook, but it allows expression by everybody. I have to tell you that I was invited to speak at this forum, but I was in England at the time. I told them I wouldn't be in Israel. So I saw the papers that were presented, and at the end of the volume is the paper that Dr. Tova Soloveitchik-Lichtenstein presented about her father. I have to tell you that this is precious because, generally speaking, the Soloveitchik children do not talk about their father in public for many reasons, some that you can certainly understand. This time she went public, and she's writing at the end of the essay, which is the most powerful part, her father's influence so many years after he stopped playing a role in public. And I can state, as a Talmud of the Rav, I would say it's at least 30 years today that the Rav has played no public role. By 1981, his health was so precarious. By 1985, he no longer gave any shiur whatsoever. And how many years have gone by? Died in 1993. So she writes about all those who speak in the Rav's name. And she deals with the right wing and the left wing. But she has one paragraph there which is overwhelming, and I went up to heaven with joy because it's something I've said over the decades in many public forums. One time I said this out on the coast, and the rabbi was so angry at me that he went and held a special shiur a week later just to refute everything I said. All right, but say that, let that rabbi live and be well. But if I have Tovra on my side, I think she knew her father. And she makes the point that while the right wing totally misportrays her father by, you know, forgetting about the great world out there, the world of knowledge and general studies and literature, but she says at least they're committed to learning and to Torah and tradition. But she says the left wing, she is furious, because they portray her father as an innovator, the precursors of Chovev Torah. They once held a convention here, a da, and they published on the front page of the Jerusalem Post their program with the Rav's picture in the background. It was unbelievable. And she said, they don't ignore my father. The right wing ignores part of his message, but they don't recreate him entirely. They not only ignore my father's message, they abolish it. What was the heart of his message? Tradition, tradition, surrender to Halacha, the Kutzel Shel Yud, the Mesorah. This was the Rav, of course. So, you see, Mordechai Bennett was a personality like the Rav. He was not narrow, but his heart was totally committed to Torah Hashem Tamima. And when he saw what the Summon Rosh did, he was flabbergasted. And here you have an amazing source. Yes, yes, sir.
Is he angry that it's a literal forgery, that it's the name of the Rosh? Like, how do you not written in the name of the Rosh?
No, he's angry, number one, that he had the chutzpah to say all this apikursit and to put it yet in the name of the Rosh. But put it in the name of the Rosh as a sideshow. You can be a forger, fine, but at least you didn't say Sisrei Torah. At least you didn't recreate the Torah. At least you understand it's frightening. And you look at the faculty of Chovevei Torah, women ordained conservative reform with their titles, rabbis on the faculty. It's frightening.
Why is it so frightening?
Yeah, right. Because what you're saying is, what that means, I don't have time now, but what it means in a nutshell.
You have a woman who's not a rabbi. She's not functioning as a rabbi. She's functioning as a teacher.
You have a woman who's a Mechalelet Shabbos from the Reform Movement. What you are saying is Torah's...
We know that she's Mechalelet
Shabbos. Yitzchak, listen to me now. What you're saying is pluralism. Torah is not binding. Halacha, that's what the message is.
I say, Garich you go Hashem, to a doctor who's a good physician, yeah. Check
what does that have to do with Jewish
guy?
If I go to a doctor, I go to a guy if he's the top doctor. But you don't put down the title rabbi. Then if that's my objection, I don't care. So if she's a pastoral psychologist and there's no one orthodox to teach, so put down doctor, whatever her title is. But when you call her rabbi, you know what that is saying? That Torah is not binding. That Naseh Nishmah does not exist. And this is our greatest problem on the Western scene.
Put it that way.
Thank you. Because the Western, Rabbi Rubin has come around. Baruch Hashem, Ashrei Nisal Zechino. Vodal Emet. Yitzchak, this is our greatest problem in the Western world. Because Rabbi Chesis is going out into a world where there's no concept of surrender to a higher authority. The New York Times, you. Everything is you. There's no past. You don't care about the future. Here, now, me. I'm not harming anyone. Same-sex marriages. What's wrong? Who am I harming? Consenting adults. And this is our biggest problem. And this is the touchstone of the debate or the dialogue between Torah and the non-Torah world. And you have to be clear. It doesn't mean we can be friendly, we can respect, etc. But the message has to be clear. And I'm angry on a second level that I complained to Chovevei Torah, to their big shots, and they told me, you're absolutely right, we're erasing it. This is 6, 7, 8 years ago. I don't remember how many years ago. They erased it? Check the website. Okay, I'll be happy to be informed that they listened to Aaron Rakefet on that level. But it's a lot deeper. It represents thinking. This is, you know, it's one thing. You want to do a forgery. Imagine you come up with a tremendous chiddush, you write it out, so you figure if I show it to my Rebbe in my name, the Rebbe may dismiss it. But if I show him, I discovered a manuscript, Reb Chaim Briska, Rebbe, what do you think? And the Rav looks at it, oh, fabulous, Rebbe, it's me, it's not Reb Chaim, all right. The Rav would laugh and smack your face for being a forger, but at least he wouldn't call you an apikores. Here, the biggest problem is, it's not the forgery. You follow me, Nachum? The forgery is a sideshow. But what he said. Now, who would you write the letter to? You're Reb Mordechai Bennett, and you've just seen the Besamim Rosh. You're ready to have heart failure. And who would you write to? No, he writes to his father. And that's what you have to understand. Reb Zvi Hirsch Berlin was one of the Gedolei Yisrael. Reb Zvi Hirsch Berlin was a cousin to the Noda Yehuda. Reb Zvi Hirsch Berlin was a giant. So he writes to his father. Now it's in the Parashat Mordechai, Sheilat Tshuva Ta'or HaChaim, Siman Hey. Look how he addresses his father. Ish l'sher hashlita hishlito elokim b'chol beito ne'eman. Boy, I'd love you. You understand what that means? He's writing to the man that God considers him like Moshe Rabbeinu. B'chol beito ne'eman. Ein hadayatam. The generation is not orphaned. V'lo Yisrael alman. And the Jewish people are not widowed as long as you are alive. And he goes on and on. I mean, this is the respect in which he held the Reb Tzvi Hirsch Berlin, Reb Scholl's father. Hagon hamufak. And kvod shem tifato malatu kvodo harab Tzvi Hirsch av beitim kihila kadosha Berlin v'chulu. What an introduction. And then, in beautiful rabbinic Hebrew, v'hine eimot ha-sheicha gedola nifrutz al kol b'nei peretz omam ha-seifa shekaru b'shmo b'samim rosh. He says darkness has enveloped the world. That book, b'samim rosh, ki kara shmo al ki yuslo b'shamim mar dara moroveh. The whole of Rei Derech HaTorah, it's all rabbinic play on words, that it simply makes the people free to leave the path of the Torah. They smell these beautiful spices, they're intoxicated, and they leave the path. And he says, Mashkemei Rosh, Reish Ayin Shin, with quotations. You got it? It's making a person drink poison. Rush. But instead of Rush, he writes Rosh. Making a person drink poison. V'sholeich chitzim l'matara. And he's shooting arrows of the Torah. And he says, Tachat Yofi, v'tachat Bosem. Instead of beauty, instead of perfume, nimak hinmak levavenu v'hayala mayim, our hearts melt away and we turn into water because of this besamim rosh. And now he goes on to give examples. Remember we spoke about Aristotle? Remember what the Besamim Rosh said? If you don't know Aristotle, you don't know Yiddishkeit. You don't understand God. You don't know theology. He says, how can you talk like this? And he quotes the Rosh. Remember I told you in the big machlokes about Maimonides, the Rosh took a position that was negative to the Moreh Nevuchim, not positive. And he says, how can you talk like this? How can you say this in the name of the Rosh? And he quotes the Tshuva HaRosh. He says, the Rosh went so far, declaring, Shaloli Shov Mei Mechem. You can't drink of the waters of Aristotle. Kitore To Avahi Lahavimi Menu Raya O Mashaluchu Kecha Torah. And he says the Rosh felt it was an abomination to quote Aristotle, to prove the Torah through Aristotle, and here along comes your son, and the Eich Nercha Atzmam Remiyah Suko Gefen Nechriyah, the Hebrew is magnificent, Lamid Yisod Emunah Yishuta Al Divrei Hevel V'Toel Tohu Shoa Umasua. He says, look what your son did. He comes along in the most beautiful concepts of Torah. He turns into vanity. He turns into hevel. He turns into holocaust. He turns into spoil. So there you have one tremendous attack on the Besamim Rosh. Maimonides, the philosophy Wow. You see, mashallah, mahadavadoma, that 100 years from now, someone writes a tshuva against studying general subjects, and they quote the Rav. And by the way, isn't it possible? Didn't one of the Rav's prime talmidim, I don't want to mention his name because I love him, we grew up together, didn't he say at the Shloshim that I walked in and out of the Rav's office or apartment in the, what was it, the Morgenstern dorm, I believe. It's all after my time. And 25 years I saw him day in and day out, and I never saw the Rav holding a secular book in his hands. Wasn't that said in public in the Beis Medrash of the yeshiva, the Harry Fishel Beis Medrash, right or wrong? And a very prominent Talmud Chacham who later leaves the yeshiva and goes elsewhere? And didn't he say that in public? And all right, Rabbi Lamb was unbelievably upset. But it may be very true, I told my students at the time. And what do you see me doing? How many of you saw me at a Yankee game in the Bronx, generally speaking? You come in and see me working and learning, working in research, Xeroxing. Don't you see me pulling Sfarim out every morning at La Briud, out of the Beis Medrash, running back and forth? No? So you're going to say, Rakefet never went to a Yankee game. Understand, you don't see the totality of the person. And Rebbetzin Pesha Feinstein, Soloveitchik, when you came into the house, so many times you saw her saying Tehillim. But you'd be an idiot to say that Rebbetzin Pesha Soloveitchik didn't know Dostoevsky, didn't read literature, didn't know Shakespeare backwards, forwards, etc., as for Baruch Lichtenstein. But many times you saw her saying Tehillim, all right, the hours that you saw her were her Tehillim hours. So you see, to put this in the mouth of the Rush, how could you do it? How could you do such a thing? Okay. But forgery, what can I tell you? Forgery is possible. It's happened before. It'll happen again. But to put words that are totally untrue, that's the real problem. That's the real problem. Let me go further. No? What else did the B'Sama Rav say? Remember, I showed you a long tshuva that was totally, absolutely, completely against open sugyas in Shas, against the fifth chapter of Hilchat Yesodei HaTorah, against all that has happened in Jewish history. And he had the chutzpah to write it. Do you remember what the B'Sama Rosh did? He totally abolished the concept of Yoharei V'yal Yahava. We have three basic Yisurim. Right or wrong. Kill someone and I'll kill you. Worship the idol or I'll kill you. Rape that woman or I'll kill you. Yoharei V'yal Yahava. What does this have to do with a psak of Beis Din? What does it have to do with Sanhedrin? The B'Sama Rosh turned it into a chi of mita, like any other chi of mita, and without a Sanhedrin, without musmach, without ish mi piyish, chas v'chalila, you should give your life. And by the way, this is direct influence of the modern world. Gili, the New York Times, there is nothing you give your life for. Plain and simple. You understand? Well, what do you mean, give your life? That's better. We should be dead. We're alive. We're kicking. Psalmim Rosh, totally influenced by modern thinking. And I don't have to tell you, the Tzadikim Ubei Shakov girls. Reb Mordechai Bennett, I got to give him credit. He felt the pulse totally accurately. And he yells to his father, how could your son have written this? How could you mention this? How can you be motzi laz on all the Jews that gave their lives, what went on in the Crusades, what went on in the Khmelnytsky massacres, whether or not the Tzadi Gimel Banar happened? And you know how much time I spent on that in my Shayurim a number of years ago, many years ago already. But it doesn't matter. The fact is, whether it happened or didn't happen, it could have happened. And it reveals our mentality. And you heard the Aliyah. Okay, I admit today, Baruch Hashem, we have an army. Roe Klein, do I have to go further? He gave his life to save all the soldiers around him. Jumped on the grenade. Blew himself up, but saved the lives of everyone around him. They were only slightly injured because he took the full impact of the explosion. Who is Roe Klein? A product of our yeshiva, of Hesda Yeshiva, the Roe Klein, Hashem Yikom Damo. Wow, we still live with it. The army, when you take your oath, Matan took an oath at the fallout ceremony. Believe me, it scares the hell out of you if you know Hebrew. To give your life, to live or to die for the IDF, which ultimately means for the Jewish people. I took the oath. My children, my sons-in-law all took the oath. All my grandchildren, each one. Wow. Wow. And he sensed it. Then he writes to his father, the son is an apikores. Then he goes on, remember, with the tefillin, what he came up with. Again, you have to understand it. Of all the things we do, we daven, we make kiddush, we make a seder, everything a non-Jew can understand. Everyone knows you have non-Jews to your seder. It's a whole shaila, by the way, how you can cook for them. That's not a simple matter. Rabbi Gurin used to make a seder and have the American ambassador here. But they were mekhil because it's a caterer that prepares everything before. All right, could be. I don't know. Not paskening. But you have non-Jews to the seder. Chabad does it. Shmuli Boteach, with the mayor of Newark today, who talks better than any rabbi. Yeah, he's like a top grade Orthodox rabbi, Kala Kavodla. All right? Everything a non-Jew can understand. Did you ever put tefillin on a non-Jew? How can a non-Jew comprehend what tefillin on? The modern mind? What, the Jews are insane? The Jews are crazy? Take animal boxes? Take animal hide? What's going on here?
What is the third point that he's making?
The third point? That the B'Samim Rosh, when he gave his whole pupil, that we cannot put on tefillin today, because we're Baal Kriyim. Do you remember this or not? That Takanat Ezra still exists on one level for all Jews. Well, if that's the case, there's no Jew above the age of 15, 16 who can put on tefillin today. He totally abolishes tefillin. I don't want to say a bad word or a good word, but everyone in this class is Becheskat Baal Kari. When's the last time you went to mikvah? Chabatnikim, all right, so you'll have the Chabatnikim taka can put on tefillin. I saw a Friday afternoon walking to the Kotel in the old city. I saw a Hasidish guy walking with his big day Shabbos and with a big towel around him. He was running to mikvah. Okay, to say that. But how many Jews run to mikveh every day? In his time, I don't believe anyone ran to mikveh yet. Chabad didn't exist yet. Chabad was not on the map. The Alter Rebbe, all that goes on. Remember, I gave Sherman this. I explained it to you in detail. But here he comes in with Frumkeit. With this Frumkeit, you can destroy the world. You understand? You totally have abolished tefillin. And then he goes crazy, writing to his father, quoting Rakefet, that your son is machmir on something v'chidishu, v'yol lo yal tvinim minei. Never did anyone talk like this. We don't learn from this. We can't apply it halacha l'maisa. Whoever heard anything like this? And gam chumre di'atili de kulahu. This is a tremendous chumrah that will lead to an unbelievable kula, lirapot mitzvat tefillin. People will no longer put on tefillin. And the Hamon Yisrael, Enes Haral Litvol Lirkerian, the overwhelming majority of the Jewish people do not go to mikvah every day. And he says, according to your son's chiddush, the Yoga Fizem, Mahwila Chachomim Bibitulam, the Takanet Ezra, Sharehi Kameir Edut Sheke Bakori Kriyachma, below Tvilin. And he says, what are you talking about? Didn't the Gemara tell us in Brachot that Chachomim Wamamato, Takanet Ezra, Takanet Shenet Sibuya Cholom Lamoba? And if this is the case, look what you're doing. They can't daven. If you, when you say Kriyat Shema, you have to have tefillin on. Kshatim liot nedech v'letot tefot ben enecha. If you don't have tefillin on, you are giving Eidut Sheka. Isn't it on Tisha B'Av? No, you tell me. What is your minik Tisha B'Av? The morning we don't put on tefillin. Right or wrong? Pe'er. You got to take the pe'er off. Tzchub in Abaya. The afternoon we put on tefillin. Do you say Kriyat Shema at Mincha or not? Tremendous machloket. On one hand, saying Kriyat Shema is Divrei Torah. On Tisha B'Av, you can't say Divrei Torah necessarily. On the other hand, in the morning when you said Kriyat Shema, you didn't have tefillin on. You were Meyed Eidut Sheka. It's the machlokes. I say Kriyat Shema. Most Jews today say Kriyat Shema at Mincha time. There's some big lamdanim who insist, yeah, all right, if I may quote the Chafetz Chaim, you know what a gentleman, do you know what I'm talking about? May I quote the Chafetz Chaim? Erev Tisha B'Av, are you allowed to learn Torah from Chatzot on? Only sad parts, you can't learn Torah. Mesameach HaTalev. Shabbos afternoon, a whole question. Are you allowed to learn when Tisha B'Av falls Saturday night, which happens quite often? Sometimes it's a nitche and sometimes it's really on Sunday. Are you allowed to learn Shabbos afternoon? Absolutely not. Only the Varm you can learn on Tisha B'Av. The Chafetz Chaim used to learn. And they asked him, Rebbe. And he evidently answered, I wasn't there, but this is the apocryphal answer. Ich hab gewollt sein, sie sollen geben mir Makkes in Eilem Haba, zu lieb das, was ich hab gelernt, Shabbos Erev Tisha B'Av. I would like to see them giving me stripes, Malkut, in the world to come, because I studied Torah on Erev Shabbos. Erev Tisha B'Av on Shabbos. So one second. The Raget Shavan Tisha B'Av, no, that's your dua, but this is the Chafetz Chaim. It's a little different. The Raget Shavu is the Raget Shavu. That's a different story. So I want to tell you, I can tell you why Klal Yisrael says Kriyat Shema over Shabbos Mincha. I don't believe anyone will get Malkut for saying Kriyat Shema on Tisha B'Av, even though it is Divrei Torah. Yes, Mendel.
Isn't that where the
base ladies,
quote unquote,
coolers
is learning
Erev Tisha B'Av? No, you're hearing it. Believe me, I'm pretty sure Reb Chaim learned Erev Tisha B'Av, so what can I tell you? But you hear with the Raget Shavu learned on Tisha B'Av. I know people were sitting Shiva Gedolei Yisrael, and they would be talking and learning, you know, and a Shaila that couldn't help themselves. And even with Avelut, you look up a Shaila, but you're not allowed to be mamik. They were going back and forth and deep. And you know, the famous stories with the Lubavitcher Rebbe and the Rav. So right away you have to ask, I is sitting Shiva, what can I tell you? Malkut you won't get for it. That much I can tell you. But you understand, for these Jews, Litvish Yidden, Torah learning was breathing. If they stopped learning, they couldn't breathe. But tefillin, not to put on, he was hysterical. He caught everything. Then, remember months ago, Stam Yena, his lackadaisical attitude, Rabbeinu Tam, Hitir. And again, it's a reflection of the modern world. A guy can understand you can't eat pig. You can't eat bacon. You can't eat fries, whatever, beef fries. Fine. A guy can understand there may be laws of shechita. You know how they understand that? Because the Arabs have the halal. So Obama can't come out against halal, so they can't come out against kosher. Beautiful. Why? What is trade about wine? The New York Times in a million years will not understand why we can't drink Gallo Brothers wine. Look at the wine. What's wrong with wine? What does wine have? I bought some bottles today to give out on Purim. Well, it's the same wine that you can buy in Chveis and ShopRite. Do they sell wine in American stores? Or they're not allowed. Only liquor
stores.
Depends on the state. Say that. So here he goes after him, his lackadaisical attitude. Remember, wine, stamyenum, cheese. Where did he get this from? What is he talking about? Hagvinat v'chalav. How dare you say that Rabbeinu Tam permitted this? The only time they permitted non-Jewish cheese was when you watched from start to finish and you knew that the Gentiles did not mix in enzymes from non-kosher animals or from any animal, but where you didn't watch from start to finish, how can you say such a thing? That anyone reading this tshuva would see that he's opened up the entire fence between us and the Gentiles and drink their wine, eat their cheese. All the walls of separation have broken down. Finally, perhaps one of the most famous cases, remember what he wrote about Tisha B'Av? When the Chatan Kala get married, and they have to get married, they have to do the marriage quickly, they're worried stiff someone else will come along and rob the Kala away, and he permits a marriage on Tisha B'Av, and feasting and drinking, and Chas v'Chalila to say one word about Korban Habayit and not to make the Chatan v'Kala sad, and he even those that are invited and the close friends and the Shushpinim, what you would call the ushers, I believe, there's no Tisha B'Av left. And what a tshuva! Remember that tshuva? And again, this is the modern world. Adam, are you an American citizen or are you a Jew? Where is your loyalty? Are you willing to serve in the American army and give your life for the United States of America? Did you read the article in the Yediot this Friday? What an article. Gentlemen, wow, in the magazine section. Couldn't believe it. My grandchildren already read it before I brought it to them. They saw it at a friend's house. This girl, an American father, born here, grew up in Shiloh. That's right near Itamar. Father became more Haredi, they moved to Bayit Vegan. They spoke only Hebrew. Then he moved to Meir Sharim, they spoke only Yiddish. And then he got involved with the Natura Karta. I can tell you, her father did not study with me, that's for sure, or could be. He studied with me, and there's freedom of choice. Wow. And this girl, growing up in the Natura Karta territory, going to their schools, a relative beat her. She complained to the police. Wow. Ultimately, she had to leave the neighborhood, she had to leave home, a moisa. She says it in Yiddish, in the article. A family in North Tel Aviv adopted her. Wealthy family, help someone run away from Yiddishkeit, that's their goal. There are many families like that. It's a sad story. You don't have to throw the baby out with the bathwater. And then they bought her a ticket to California, a return trip, a wealthy family. She goes to California. She never used the return ticket. Today, she's a sergeant in Afghanistan in the American Army, and she says in the interview, I love America. I'm willing to give my life for America. Jordan? Ask yourself that same question. Oh my God. What a story. What a story. Who are we? What are we? And if we're Americans, and if we're French, and if we're Spanish, and if we're... How dare we celebrate Tisha B'Av? Tisha B'Av means you have dual loyalty. What do you lack? What's wrong? Kissinger became Secretary of State. What a country. With his German accent and all. Secretary of State. What a country. How can you celebrate Tisha B'Av? B'Shamem Rosh? Wow. He was caught between two worlds. And he threw out that tshuva. Take it literally. Tisha B'Av is out the door. He was a precursor to the Reform Movement. When the Reform Movement began, you all know by the time of the Pittsburgh Platform, Palestine, Restoration, Mashiach, Jerusalem, all gone. We live in America. America, what did the Americans just say? America is our Palestine. Washington, D.C. is our Jerusalem. What did the German Jews say? Germany is our Palestine. Berlin is our Jerusalem. The communists, how many Jews? Gan Eden. The Soviet Union. Moscow. Forbidden in Russia to say, Lashana Haba B'Yerushalayim. And I end off with the true story. I write it in my book. Told it many times. People thank me for telling it and telling it again. We sent two shlichim. Holidays, we send kids. We didn't send adults. Kids younger than you. College kids, college graduates. Their role was not to teach. Their role was simply to visit, go into the shuls, and show that Am Yisrael Chai, that they're Jewish kids in the world who know how to daven, know how to daven from Amid, could read a Haftorah. So we sent these two kids, we're on Yom Kippur, the only synagogue, functioning synagogue in Moscow, Achapova Street, and these two kids are sitting next to two elderly Jewish gentlemen whom they befriended. And these kids understood Yiddish, but they never let on. They only were allowed to speak English. Make believe they're from America. Well, they might have been from America at that point. And at the end of the davening, the Yiddish-speaking old men say one to the other, Ich verstehe nicht die Amerikaner Kinder. I don't understand these American children. Mir tarin ich sagen, Lashana Haba B'Yerushalayim. We can't say Lashana Haba B'Yerushalayim. But that's our fondest wish. And they who can say it, don't live there. And these two kids wanted to shout and yell, we're going on Aliyah next year. We're going to Yerushalayim. But they couldn't say a word. The B'Shamem Rosh threw out Tisha B'Av. And that means restoration. So he wrote to his father, he raised the roof, he yelled, he shouted. The father was caught between two worlds. Who do you turn to? The truth or your child? A parent caught in the quagmire. It's a very difficult situation. Of course, we love our children, right or wrong, bad or good, they're still our children. I can only tell you one simple example that I know from life. The son of a very prominent British Jew, Gaon, Talmud Chacham, etc., winds up getting arrested for a big money scam. It's years ago, and is sentenced to jail. And he serves a number of years in a British prison. He could have run away to Israel, could have absconded. I don't believe Israel would have sent him back on a monetary crime. It wasn't exactly billions, although it was heavy money by English standards. But he didn't run away. They asked him why, and he said, at least in England, my mother can visit me in prison. But if I run away to Israel, she can't see me. The trip is too hard for her. And that's a fascinating concept. A parent and a child caught in this duplicity. Sometimes we all face it in life. Kid comes home from school. I had a grandson. They wanted to throw him out. All right. What do you do? Thank God he had the right machanchim. Turned into an unbelievable matmir in Talmud Chacham. But he was a wild kid when he started high school. Whose side do you take? I leave it stand. Wait to what I show you next week. Gentlemen, to review, gentlemen and young lady, mazal tov, bracha v'hatzlacha, kesha shel kayama, u'binyan adei ad. I wrote a letter to you. I gave it to a member of the Eidat HaMizrach, who he married an Ashkenaziyah, and his father married an Ashkenaziyah, and his grandfather married an Ashkenaziyah. There's so much Ashkenazic blood in him, but he takes all the kulat of being an Eidat HaMizrach person. And the letter never reached you, which is a first in history for me. Young people, to reiterate, you said a few words about the tragedy. As heavy as my heart is, we have to continue. We couldn't give our enemies another victory. I hope I gave a good share. I finished up the B'Sam and Rosh. I gave you more examples of normative thinking.
Is this the last part or something?
No. I got to show you what happens afterwards. They go crazy attacking him, but you have to see with the print and the machloket, and it is an unbelievably fascinating topic. And
are there people today who
we'll get there, yes. There are people today who would slap my face and say you're absolutely wrong.
Really
underlined. We'll get there. As I told you.
You mean to say there's a controversy in Jewish scholarship today, and maybe it's not a controversy?
You used the word Jewish scholarship. There's a controversy in the Torah world. Using the wrong word.
There is, I mean, you're right. There is a distinction.
Give me a chance. I'm just beginning the controversy. Give me a chance. You'll see. Next week, the Chatam Sofer, the first edition, the second edition, and the Minchat Larsha. And you will see, and the Chidah, you'll see already as the controversy begins, whose side's on which side. Okay, tomorrow is a very, very important shir. Last week was Hester Panim. Tomorrow we deal with the first part of the Satmar Rebbe. We're in the big leagues tomorrow. In addition, I'll show you the book that Nachum Lam was good enough to lend me. Yitzchak, this is for you from Rav Asher Weiss. This is very fascinating. This is an article on a new Haggadah that just came out for intermarried couples. And the reform movement, the conservative movement, is having lectures on it. It's beyond words. On intermarriage.
Who's that?
This is a very this couple. When it's farther involved, they can have a chazaka.
What?
They're smarter than we are. This is a wedding in Ohed Tzedek Synagogue. There is the Lubavitcher Rebbe before we get the Lubavitcher. There's the Biyana Rebbe.
Yeah.
There's the 1 second. Which Rebbe is? That's Reb Shmaya Gur Aryeh. These were the two sons-in-law of the previous Rebbe, who was alive at this time. There is Reb Yaakov Moshe HaKohen Lesson from YU. There is Rabbi Ginsburg from the Agudas HaRabbanim.
Let me see what was.
There's
he was a fine man.
Here is the article on the books that were lost from Germany in the Holocaust, and somehow many are reappearing on the Upper West Side, and they're going into the library there, and there's a Freiman. There's a Mrs. Freiman who's quoted at the end. I know her children, some firm, wonderful family, Yekkers. And And here is on the whole question of feminism, a critique of it and a defense of it by two Haredi personalities. Gentlemen, until we meet again in health and happiness, das verdanya. I only hope.